Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
And welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And we've got a lot of things here to talk about. A lot of news and notes and predictions, breakdowns from past weekend's fights to this upcoming weekend. You got Canelo Alvarez versus Alfredo Angulo, El Perro, pay-per-view on Showtime this Saturday. You know, the fight card's decent. I'll get a little bit into that as soon as my co-host calls in and stuff. We can jump right into that. But, hey, I don't know if you guys have heard this already. It's already going viral. Carlos Molina, the IBF champion who dethroned short-lived champion Isha Shea Smith, he got arrested on Tuesday. And what it was stemming from was that it's from Wisconsin, and he failed to register as a sex offender. And this was like 7 years ago. And so for that too, because his immigration was in question, they're holding them as well for that until that is also cleared up. So he was arrested in the state of Nevada in Las Vegas Tuesday. And he's been there ever since like 9:30 today. I'm not sure if he's been released, but they said they're going to release him. Richard Schaefer had made a statement with Yahoo Sports saying that he's going to be released and that he'll be back just in time for the final press conference, which is set for tomorrow at 1 p.m. But he has been wanted. He's been a wanted man for quite some time. The out-of-game sheriff had charged him with a sex offense charge that was pending back from January 2007. It's a misdemeanor, a disorderly conduct warrant that was out from 2005. So this is something the IBF junior middleweight has got to take care of. He's got to handle. He's supposed to register in the state of Wisconsin. Didn't do it. Flies into Vegas, getting ready for his first title defense against Charlo. And this comes around, you know. It's funny. Me and Gary were just talking a little earlier, and we were talking about some stuff, and I had just made like a, this is not even regarding this happened in Molina, but I said, you know, the thing about with people nowadays, they're always trying to kind of weasel the way out of the trouble they put themselves in. And I said, if you can't do the crime, I mean, if you can't do the time, you shouldn't do the crime. And this is obviously fits the bill for Carlos Molina here, the king. And now with this on his back, he's preparing himself for his first title defense against an undefeated fighter, a guy that really looks bigger, a little big to be at the middleweight division. So he's already had a lot on his plate here. And meaning that he's got to have the perfect strategy, being that mauler style that he's adopted since getting in with James Kirtland, was that going to be the right game plan to go against the younger, stronger, and faster? Charlo, Jamal, right? What's that kid's name again, Gabriel? He's facing?
This one is Jermell Charlo.
Jermell Charlo, okay.
As opposed to Jarmel.
Jarmel, yeah. I know, I always get them confused because they're also twins. But so now this happens. This is something that the gamblers and the bettors got to sit back now and think about who's going to take this fight. I don't know who's the heavy favorite for Molina versus Charlo, but now I think Charlo was probably a nose ahead of him in the betting odds. I'm not sure, but if now I think it's a full head and a neck because this has got to weigh heavy on Molina. You know, he's sitting in there right now. He's obviously losing valuable time, which is the last come down of your workout, the last run in your strategy, your game plan, your prep talk from your coach to your conditioning coach, all of that there. you're kind of losing the perks of soaking this all in, getting the shot. You just won the IBF title, and you're doing your first title defense. So this is, you got to really start looking into taking this in consideration, that there's going to be a strong possibility, you know, he may be what Brandon Rios likes to refer to as a mind fuck.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, how do you have something like that happen 5 days out from the bout and not have it weighing on you? If I don't win this, you know, my whole future is kind of in jeopardy. A guy like Molina, you know, people will complain about title belts, this, that, and the other thing. But at the same time, you know, there's too many or whatever. But a guy like Molina, who's a defensive fighter, a bit of a spoiler, doesn't draw, you know, he's a kingdom without a king, you know, a king without a kingdom in a sense. When he gets a belt like that, that's how he gets TV dates, that's how he gets big fights, that's how he's on this pay-per-view, is because of that belt. So when he's in a situation like this, where his back's up against the wall, I mean, all that pressure kind of mounts. He can't afford to lose at this point. He's worked too hard to get to this place. So, I don't see how it doesn't affect, you know, his mindset, all of that. You know, it's going to be, you know, he's still going to deal with a fight, but I mean, you know, 90% of this game is half mental, as they say. So how's he going to be prepared? It's going to be strange. And it's like the most important week, you know, making weight week. You know, not only is it physically, you know, a tough thing, but you're going to need to be mentally strong to get through that week. You're not eating anything, maybe not even drinking water from Wednesday on till Friday. That's a problem.
Well, so, I would have to say that
very, very interesting.
Well, the good thing here is that the county jail doesn't provide very good food, so I don't expect him gaining any pounds in there. If anything, I think he's losing pounds by stressing out, sitting in there, just waiting for the clock to run down so that he can be released and that he can get back into the mode of things. But you're absolutely right. This is a big fight week for himself. This is his first title defense. This is his way of proving to the fight fans that he belongs here. But now, listen, he already had up against him about the hugging technique that he brings inside the ring. A lot of fight fans don't like it. A lot of fight fans would compare him to Juan, the Quiet Man Ruiz, the heavyweight. A lot of fight fans would say, you know what, his style is not appealing. I just don't like it. I know there was a big turnoff when he had faced Issa Smith, but his dance partner at that time when winning the IBF title away from Issa wasn't really a real tango partner himself. You know, he made that fight a bit boring, you know, so I wouldn't completely blame Molina, but Molina in the past too, his style is just not that appealing. It's not that exciting. So that being said, not being exciting, trying to win over the fans, trying to continue to be the upset guy, the guy that Siri Salido definitely has always been in position in. He had a lot of obstacles, but now he's got even a bigger one. He didn't register himself as a sex offender. What was this misdemeanor charge about, you know? That's what people are, you know, and here's the thing about Fight Fan is that our minds start running. And when they start running, we don't necessarily start thinking the whole thing out. We start thinking the worst. So now you're looked at as not an exciting, as a dirty tactic fighter, a mauler, but now a sex offender. This guy's got a lot on his plate now. A lot on his plate. And on top of it, he was born in Mexico, lives here in the United States, and didn't deal with his immigration card. And if you don't remember about that, ICE had a little something to do with Angulo, but he was wrongfully, you know, put in there. Molina may not be in that same position because now he's got a misdemeanor, and that plays out where the United States doesn't want to have misdemeanors or felons in our country. So
yeah, that's the thing. You know, being here, And, you know, I'm the son of someone that came over to this country and then, you know, got their citizenship, did all the right things, has been a model citizen her whole life. It's my mom. My dad is like second generation, but from Mexico. And, you know, my family, you know, I'm sure everybody's got their bad apples here and there, but by and large, we've stayed on the straight and narrow, and we've actually contributed to the American society, in some cases on a very high level. Being here is a privilege. Coming to this country is a privilege. You don't get to come here and then commit crimes and then not take care of it. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for the guy. You know, if all this stuff's true and he's being placed on the immigration hold and he's not handling his stuff, you know, just like being on TV and fighting for money, you know, you have to work hard to get to that place, and it's a privilege, not a right. So is being in this country and being a citizen of it, being a contributing member of society, you know, U.S. society or any society that you're trying to enter from another country. So it's got a whole bag of problems that's just cropped up. It's going to be a big bag. I think, too, that, you know, even just looking at his brother's performance recently, where everybody thought it was a big step up, and then it just looked like, you know, another day at the gym, I think the odds probably changed there. The ceiling is very high on the Charlos, I think. I wasn't quite sure, but those guys seem to have some serious chops and some serious skills. And I think the ceiling could be quite high on them. And I think this is probably going to be the beginning of a title run for the other Charlo brother. If I was kind of leaning on him, now I'm really picking.
Well, here's the thing with the Charlo brother here is that let's just take out the equation what Molina's going through right now, sitting in jail waiting to be bailed out so that he can attend to the 1 p.m. press conference there at the MGM. Charlo game plan to me would have to kind of stay away, use his length, use his legs. His legs are a lot younger and fresher, so that they're not tired out by a guy grappling him, a guy grabbing onto him and trying to do some inside dirty tactics that some folks would kind of perceive as. You know, Charlo's going to have to box. He's going to have to give Molina angles. He's going to have to keep that jab out there so that it creates time for him to take a step back and counterpunch, so that when Molina can get a bit confused, where Molina kind of gives up on that old style that he's adopted. Kirtland, you know, kind of figured it out towards the end of those last two or three rounds when he had met up with Molina. So Charlo's got to kind of pick up immediately and not allow Molina to smother him. And that's what Charlo to me has got to show in this fight. He's got to be smart about it. He's really got to be smart about it because he's going to need that distance. I can't picture him outboxing him in the inside, because I don't think Molina's going to give you that opportunity. He wasn't able to get – I mean, you know, Issa Smith was not able to get that opportunity. And then again, you know, Smith is a crafty fighter that can do certain things in the inside as well that is not very pretty, but it wasn't working out for him. It wasn't panning out, and he didn't fall to another tactic. He didn't go to a plan B. So Charlo, to me, he's got to stick to a plan B and a plan A, and that plan A is going to be use the jab. The plan B is give him angles and use the overall ring. Don't corner yourself. Try to keep it in the middle. Try to use the gifts that have been given to you and use that IQ. Molina's going to go. He's a one-trick pony, in my opinion, right now. He's going to go forward. He's going to try to maul you up, and he's going to try to make it his type of fight, which is going to be an ugly fight. What do you think, Gable?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you say Carlos Molina, to me, I say ugly fight. You know, it's always going to be a little bit ugly. But Charlo, you know, this Charlo is more of the power puncher. You know, he's more less the pure boxer. And what's interesting about these guys, I mean, it's so early in their careers to be having these kind of fights. And Molina is that guy, like he is the gray area. You know, there's some guys that you go, well, they need seasoning. They need to get that gray area where they can hold or they can hit on the hip. Like we'll get into the Toledo fight. That fight was a lot of gray area, you know, with those veteran tricks where it's not just about punching or defending, but it's also about doing hidden damage that the refs don't see. And so this fight, you know, Molina is all of that. He's that gray area where he's going to hold you. He's going to swarm you, and he's going to smother your power. He's going to do your best to not have your, you know, let you do your game plan, which is, you know, in this case, is one where he's just like, let your hands go and punch. So I still think, though, you know, that Charlotte's power is very real. So I think that he'll be able to get respect early and kind of keep it. What I wonder about is the experience factor and how he will be down the back end, you know. Will he let that distance close as he tires mentally and thus physically? And then that's when Molina takes over. But it's not like Molina's going to take over and become his offensive powerhouse. Because that's not really his game. I think it's an interesting fight, but we'll see what this setback did, you know.
Well, right now, Brian Fogg trying to make a call to speak to the Molina camp, and his publicist, Andre, just told him he had no clue what happened. He said, what, our Molina? And told Brian that he will get back to him and give us some information, because he was unaware of it, that Molina was incarcerated right now, being held at the county jail in Las Vegas, Nevada. So hopefully we'll get some more information about where that stands, and go from there. You know, Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. I'll slow it down. 215-7598. Don't forget to download the Leaving the Ring Network app, where you can catch the archives of the next round, and you can catch only on the app, the Ball Spanish radio show, Boxeo Tijuana Radio, which airs every Tuesday. So be sure to download that. And also, among all the other features that we have on there, like the fan wall, voicemail, the automatic Instagram, you can follow all of our all of our tweets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as well as catch the archives of The Naked Truth. And soon to be there, again, is the Boxing Blitz series. So make sure you download that. Again, you can call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here when Leaving the Ring. Let's continue on about the one card that's happening on pay-per-view. I was about to call it the one because of Floyd Mayweather and Canelo. Dude, you believe that? Because I have so many texts going on right now on my phone. I got kind of sidetracked. But this is being billed as the toe-to-toe, which, you know what, rightfully so, because I think that Angulo's definitely going to go, is going to try to go toe-to-toe with Canelo, and I think Canelo's going to try to go toe-to-toe with Angulo for the first two or three rounds, but I think when he finds out that there is definitely more bite to the bark of Angulo, that he's going to want to be the groomer in this fight. He's going to want to try to groom Angulo when he comes in, meaning that he's going to want to try to outbox him. That would be the smart thing to do, is outbox Angulo. Don't back yourself up. Don't trap yourself. And don't think that your punching power is going to be the definite turnaround in this fight, even those body shots. Because here's the thing. I think what a lot of people forget, there's a reason why a lot of folks don't go to the body. For instance, we'll talk a little later about Lomachenko versus Salido. And the one big complaint about that HBO commentators were having, and even some fight fans on social networks was having about Lomachenko, was saying that he's not going to the body. Well, there's sometime a reason why a fighter won't go to that body. There's two things. One is that they're not confident enough to go there yet, because they just don't practice that as much in the gym. And two is that their punching power has made them cautious of dropping their hands and trying to land to the body, because it leaves an opening. Now you're subjected to getting countered. And I think that's going to kind of come down with Canelo. I think Canelo is going to try to go to that body, but in turn, even though Angulo is a slow guy, you know, he's slow-footed, slow hands, he's so heavy-handed, and he takes a shot so well. I don't care what folks think, man. I'm sorry, but Canelo to me is not a punching power guy at 154. The guys that he was, you know, just demolishing were not even true junior middleweights. And Angulo to me showed me he could take a real junior middleweight punch. I mean, Kirtland is a savage, and he was able to really take the onslaught that Kirtland was bringing to him for numerous rounds. Now, yeah, he got stopped, but dude, we're talking about James Kirtland here. Mandingo's no, this is, you know, no cakewalk, okay? This guy, you can't not sit here and say, oh, this guy has no punching power, because he's known to turn around fights when he's hurt. Arislan Lara is one of the best in the business. Is by far as boxing IQ, you could put him up in the ranks of Rigondeaux and Floyd Mayweather, but he's got pop just like Rigondeaux. He's got a punch that just doesn't make you humble. He's got a punch to make your legs buckle. And he was taking Lara's best shots. Where Canelo, to me, doesn't box as well as Lara. He doesn't have the punching power of Kirtland and Lara. And he hasn't really proved to me that he can sustain the pressure of what El Perro can bring. I have seen more out of El Perro, even though, you know, he did turn around, whether it was the thumb in the eye or whatever it was. I think it had a lot to do with the punching power involved with Lara that made him turn around and quit. Well, in that eighth or ninth round, I can't remember the exact round, but I still have more trust and confidence in what Angulo can bring and do on a fight night than I can with Canelo. Canelo didn't show anything with me with Floyd Mayweather, but hey, you know what? I can't take nothing away from him because a lot of guys can't. So you can't really judge that fight, you know, because here's the thing. And this is two different type of fighters, completely different type of fight. You know, Angulo's not looking to go in there and outbox him and counter him. Angulo's going, he's going in there as if he's got a bone to chew. And I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a big, strong junior middleweight go in there and chew away as if he's been caged up for a very long time, and he's chewed his way out of a wood fence to get to the back to the neighbor's backyard to get at the pussycat that's sitting back there next by the pool. Gabriel,
this is gonna be an interesting fight. Like I normally get a chance to see both fighters, you know, and now that I live in the Bay Area, I have kind of limited access on some levels, especially if I'm doing this show. I'm not able to really fly out and go see who I need to see. That said, you know, I'm trying to not just pick the guy that I see. There's a tendency sometimes, I've noticed this when I was living in SoCal, that leading into a fight, if I only got to see one guy, I would kind of be more excited about that guy. You know, I'd see a guy spar, I'd be like, wow, he looks great. And then you go see the other guy, and you're like, okay, he looks great too. Then you get a real sense of what you've got here. In this case, I've only had a chance to watch Angulo. And I watched him in the lead-up to the Lara fight, and I watched him in the lead-up to this fight. And I would say this, you know, just going back by what I know from the past, that the fourth fight with a new trainer is usually where things really start to gel. And this is the fourth fight with Angulo's new trainer, Virgil Hunter. And this is also the third time that Angulo has gone through the whole Remy Korchemny sprint training. It's something I wrote about today on Max Boxing. And so physically, he seems very confident. Mentally, he seems incredibly confident. I think he probably could have done some more stuff physically, training-wise, but at the same time, I think I've rarely, if ever, seen him in this kind of shape. He looks great. He looks really explosive. He's never going to be a fast guy, but I think he's learned how to find some speed and be quick in spots, or you know, get to places a little bit quicker. He's never going to be fast, but he can be quicker than he is, and I think that's what they've achieved a bit. And you're right. I've never seen Canelo take on a guy that is going to go for broke. And I'm curious to see I think Angulo will. I don't think he's going to blank in terms of what happened to him at the end of the Lara fight. I think he's going to go for it. If anybody, you know, was ever a fighter that just fights until the wheels come off, I think that's the guy. And certainly he's a prototype for that. So how's Canelo going to deal with that? I mean, he got outboxed. And we kind of saw in Canelo that he could be tamed. Floyd had him confused or tamed or both in that fight. And it's not like Canelo is not a big, strong kid that could just go after him. You know, I always think back to that Felix Trinidad Bernard Hopkins. And, you know, Felix is getting fully undressed by Hopkins, just taken apart. But then late in the fight, he's like, screw it. This bit of energy left, I believe in my power, I'm going to go get this guy. And he just threw everything with the kitchen sink, like, why not, you know? And Angulo does that over the whole course of the fight. I've never seen Canelo do that in a crisis situation. And he was losing against Floyd, and he decided, I'm good. I'm fine getting outboxed. And he let that happen. What's he going to do when he's got Angulo all up on him, on his chest, hitting him with left hooks, beating him to the body, willing to exchange with him? How is he going to respond to that? How's Angulo going to deal with the uppercut of Canelo? I think that's arguably his best weapon after the jab. The right hand's good, the left hook's good, but that uppercut is pretty brutal. He throws he throws it from the rear, which you don't see. How's Angulo's face going to hold up? That's the other question I have. Interesting fight. I think it's a very, very good fight. I wouldn't go so far to say 50-50 because all the money, you know, Canelo's what, a minus 750, favorite, but still, I really like Angulo's chances in this fight.
You know the thing here's the thing about Angulo is that, you know, he's slow. He's not going to get any faster, slow-footed. But here's the thing is that he's been like that with every fight. So everybody basically that gets in there is always faster than him, you know. So this is no surprise if he gets in with Canelo. I honestly don't think he's going to see anything new because he's already – He's already accepted what he brings. And when you finally get comfortable of who you are and what are your best traits in that ring, that to me makes a more comfortable, a more focused, and a more relaxed fighter. Where Canelo to me is still a guy, he's still young, trying to find who Canelo is. Here's the other thing that I like to point out, is Angulo really has the very traditional machismo Mexican style, where Canelo doesn't have that. He's really kind of took pieces, little bits and pieces here and there. He's got more to me an American style. You know, he likes to be a little bit more flashier with his hands. He likes to be a counter puncher. He likes to have more footwork. He does things in there really that you don't see a lot of Mexicans do. And where Angulo is bringing that very traditional style. But let me tell you this, man. And I don't like watching all these 24/7 series anymore, but I caught the very first one of the All Access with Canelo and Angulo. And when Angulo, in that first episode that I watched, I didn't watch any of the rest of them. I didn't catch them. But the first one that I watched was all business Angulo. With Canelo in his camp, it was all vacation mode. And that's trouble for me, to see a guy that's in there fishing, having a great time, where this is a major fighter. I mean, this is a big test for you, man. You know, I don't know whether these guys think that his punching power is going to get him through the bites of Angulo. I just don't see that happening. I see this is going to be a very difficult fight for Canelo. I don't think, honestly... I know people are calling it could be an upset. I don't really look at it as an upset at all. I really don't. I'm picking Angulo by stoppage. I think he stops Canelo. I think that the way Angulo has kind of not mastered but perfected it for himself to cut the ring off, trap you in little pockets here and there, and land big punches, and able to kind of absorb punishment because that's his style, is to get hit so he can hit back. To me, that's what's going to really get him through the small storm that Canelo's going to bring on Saturday night. Fight fans, you want to call in and weigh in on who your guys' pick is and tell us what you think is going to happen on Saturday night. You absolutely can. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. And don't forget to download the app. Let's go with one of our first callers here on Leaving the Ring, Gable. Let's go. Area code 619, you're on live right now.
Hello?
Yeah, what's up, brother? You're on live right now. What's on your mind?
Hey, definitely think it's going to be a difficult fight for Canelo. I really think I'm with you on that one. Canelo is definitely, I just can't get it out of my mind how he got hurt by Cotto's older brother. You know, I really think that Canelo doesn't have that chin to take one of those shots from Angulo.
Yeah, you know, we go back and when Alfonso Gomez was not a big puncher, remember that? He was landing those right hands. And then all of a sudden when Alfonso gets hurt, it was immediately stopped. I kind of look at that. And the right hand that Angulo throws, it's a solid, heavy missile. You know, not a missile because it doesn't go fast, but it's a bomb. You know, it takes its time to get there. But, man, when it hits, it hits. You could hear the thump. And you could definitely see the ripple in the guy's body when it lands. And I just kind of see Canelo kind of folding up to that and kind of start using those legs like he did towards the late rounds with Trout. See, and I look at the Trout fight as well. I was watching the Trout fight yesterday, the other night, and I was watching what Trout was doing. Canelo was definitely landing a lot of shots on Trout, but Trout was too. The big difference, though, is that Trout, he's got the Malignaggi hands. They're not very powerful. They don't got a lot of steam behind them, and they're not going to make you humble. And Canelo was able to work through that and make it to his advantage. And it just made him look that more dominant, in my opinion, which really, Trout wasn't given the credit of landing the shots that he was landing against Canelo.
Definitely agree with you on that. It's just, it's going to be a very difficult fight for Canelo. I really think that Angulo definitely, you know, going to pull it off. You know, it's just, just based on other fights. I really think that, you know, this new trainer that Angulo is carrying is helping him out on setting up those right hands. You know, he really got in on Lara, and Lara's an excellent boxer, and he was able to connect with him. So I'm just kind of upset I won't be making it to Vegas to that fight. I really think it's going to be a good fight. It's a good card. It's a good show, and you know, hopefully they put on a good show regardless of who wins out.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks for calling in, man.
Well, thank you, guys. You have a good day, and thanks for the show, man. Really appreciate all the insights, and, you know, you and Dave do a great job. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, brother. Thank you, man. Appreciate that. All right, fans, you want to call in? Definitely can. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. Let's take another caller really quick. Kind of weigh in on what they think what's going to happen on Saturday night between Canelo Alvarez versus Alfredo Angulo. Let's go with area code 111. You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother? Area code 111, you there? Okay. Let's move on really quick, man, on that five card here. I think we kind of both kind of gave our prediction and what we think is going to happen on Saturday night. And then after we have Siri on with us here on a short interview, we'll talk about this past weekend fights. I think we're doing things backwards today, but that's okay. You know, that's how we do it here on Leaving the Ring. Santa Cruz, Leo Santa Cruz. Everybody's very hyped. Everybody's hyped up about him. An exciting fighter. I wouldn't say completely that he's a proven fighter, but he's definitely an exciting guy. He's getting in with Cristian Mijares, who Mijares is one time was considered a pound-for-pound fighter, but he may be at the end of his days. My curiosity for this fight, and you know what, it makes this a very interesting fight because you have the young blood coming up, going after a guy where we're really on the fence whether or not Mijares is on the way out. And this could possibly, I think he possibly needs a push off that edge, and Leo Santa Cruz may be that guy to be able to push him off. Or he could be the guy that's been in the same position that Salido's been for the past, 5 years of his career, where everybody thinks he's on his way out and revives himself every time out here. But with the pressure that Leo Santa Cruz brings in this fight, and in all his fights, and his style, I have to sit back and wonder if Cristian can handle that. You know, can he handle the pressure of a young blood? Can he handle the pressure of a volume puncher that throws from all different angles and also takes a good shot? Cristian Mijares' legs, to me, have to be younger than his actual age in order to outmaneuver Leo, outbox him, out counter him, and really try to keep him off of him. You know, he's going to have to use that back foot a lot to establish his jab. He's going to have to use that back foot a lot to really weigh in his stance, to make sure that his punches come all the way through, you know, to humble Leo and make Leo kind of second guess himself or stop him in his motions. So it gives him time to take a step back and take a breather and then readjust himself. I'm not sure if he can do that. To me, that sounds to me as a guy that needs to be perfect. Could he be perfect that night, Gable? What do you think?
I think that Christian Morris, I mean, he's got 58 fights, 32 years old, and he's a little guy, which means he's ancient. Who is, you know, people are saying, well, he's on this winning streak or whatever, but, you know, he's only lost like once, you know, to Victor Terrazas. I think that kind of says everything. I mean, Rafael Marquez, that fight, you know, I just don't think that, you know, Rafi didn't really have much left either. Everybody else, you know, that's kind of on the streak is kind of also Rams. They're not, you know, he rebuilt in Mexico. Not to denigrate Mexico, but I mean, you know, guys that are like 21-10-2, 13-3-1 he's beating, you know, 25-6-2. He just beat a guy that's 37-14-1. Does that mean he's ready for Leo Santa Cruz? Well, I'm not really sure what Leo Santa Cruz is. I know he's got belts in two classes, but anymore, what does that really mean? So
you're getting distracted by the tweets too.
Yeah, I'm just, my phone is blowing up like crazy. I've got a, I've got
here
a couple things going. But so I just think that, I mean, you know, I'm not going to jump all over Leo, but at this point, like when you do start picking up belts, then you are subject to, you know, actually fighting good opponents as opposed to everything tailor-made for you. And this kid's got a very tailor-made career. I mean, many of us thought Christian Mahadas was done years ago. And here he is, you know, he's rebuilt in Mexico, so he's back on the team. And they put him in against Leo. But what does it mean if Leo blows him out? Does that mean he's the real deal? What does it mean if he gets exposed? What does that mean about him? I think this is a very interesting fight. I don't necessarily think that he's not real or whatever, but I do know that I've seen movement give him a lot of trouble. He does throw a lot of punches. I think he's heavy-handed, but I don't think he has a lot of one-punch knockout power. But, you know, maybe it's just a slow development of a kid. He's only 25. I just, you know, anymore, it just seems like they kind of run these kids through the mill really fast. You get them a couple belts. And what does world champion really mean anymore? You know? That's kind of one of the things that bothers me about Leo Santa Cruz. But, and just the way they're moving him. I just think, you know, why the rush to get these belts? I know TV wants championship fights and you want to build champions and stars like that. But, I mean, what are we really doing? As for the fight, I think Leo beats him. I don't think there's a lot left with Christian. And I think,
I don't think,
you know,
so
it's going to be, I think it's going to be like a 6-7 round fight and then it's done.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree with you.
Probably where it's headed.
I think that Christian's legs are just going to be the telling of the fight. It's going to show that, you know what, his older legs, they didn't finally betray him. They just finally fell apart, and that's the done deal. And like I said, he's at the edge of that cliff. He just needs to be pushed off, and Leo's going to be right there. You know, hey, one of our Twitter followers, at Lost378, said, this toe-to-toe card is really falling apart. If Molina fight gets canceled, is still pay-per-view worth? You know what? I don't think anybody was really buying the pay-per-view to see Molina and Charlo. I mean, to me, that's a fight that's in the same level of being on Showtime Championship or even on Showbox, to tell you the truth. Just because Molina's not, he's not been a really big sale. He was a great, that was a good fight there to kind of fill in the schedule slot for the pay-per-view. But also, too, you know, what we're hearing right now is that fight is not in jeopardy of being canceled. That Molina is getting bailed out today and should be at that press conference. So it doesn't hurt it if it's not, if it's been canceled, and it doesn't hurt it if it still goes on to happen here. And really quick, Brian Fogg had just tweeted, I just retweeted right now, the record of Molina of why he was arrested. He was charged, and he did plead, what was it? Let me make sure before I quote what he did plead for with the sex offense charge. He pled no contest to a charge of second-degree sexual assault of a child. And what happened was is he just moved, and he didn't register his new address when he moved back in 2002. So that's what came down with Carlos Molina. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. In about 20 minutes, we're going to have Orlando Siri Salcido with us here on Leave the Ring. Talk about his win over Lomachenko, who was on his second fight already getting a title shot. And Bob Arum already saying that they're going to try to go for another title shot. So it's like, try until we finally succeed in their part, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No, live and learn.
Lose it on the scales here, we'll just go get another one. You know? I don't know, the whole title thing. I think the further along I go in this business, the more disillusioned I get by this business, because it's just not, you know, we can get into the Salido fight. I kind of want to wait for him, but Steve's kind of, and I didn't want to turn it into an argument about this topic, because the next round is more of like a straight news show. We talk about a topic, we get right to the next thing. You and I are much more freeform. So let me ask you this question. You were watching Salido beat up Lomachenko and hit him on the belt line, hit him on the hips, sometimes go low. Meanwhile, Lomachenko's holding a lot, and people are complaining about that. But to me, the whole fight was an aberration. You got a guy fighting for a world title in his second fight, and somebody was arguing with me on Twitter, well, he was ranked number 5. Like, okay, well, you haven't asked the most important question. How do you get ranked number 5 with one fight under your belt? Which you kind of like went the distance, or, you know, you went not tooth and nail, but, you know, you didn't really look that great against kind of a middling guy in your first fight. So, wow. I mean, he looked action, but he didn't look like Rigo. So, to me, like, the whole fight was an aberration. And my point was kind of that, how do you complain about the rules when they've been so completely circumvented in order to even just make this fight? And Steve was like, well, you can't. You know, it's like a two wrongs don't make a right situation. But I'm like, yeah. But, I mean, if the whole fight's an aberration, then what are rules, really? What are rankings? And here's another question. What's this Transcendental Ratings Board doing when you got a fighter that can just leapfrog like that, a whole division? How did that happen? Who paid who? Financially, how was this put together? I mean, I know it was an optional defense, right? But at the same time, I mean, how does the sanctioning body allow that to happen? Where are the checks and balances? Who's being held accountable in a situation such as this? I know the guy wants it. He wants the title fight in the second fight. Should he have it? Should we let him?
All of them want it.
Promoters do that?
Right. Every fighter wants it. I mean, I understand he's a decorated amateur, but listen, that's the amateurs. This is the pro. I said this last week. Why do I feel like Lomachenko's being force-fed to me? Why were certain media outlets jumping on this bandwagon, calling this kid a legend already, when he only had one pro fight? You know, I mean...
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Go ahead.
That's just the media, too. I mean, I picked him, but I also was picking Lomachenko based on how good I think he is, how good his potential I think is, but also where I thought Salido was in his career. You know, I thought he was falling apart a bit. I know he was just coming off a win, but Mikey Garcia walked right through him. He didn't look so great. So I was kind of thinking, you know, Miles and the odometer is going to come up in this fight. It was a wild guess, and it was wrong. But, yeah, I think people really did kind of jump on the Lomachenko bandwagon. And it's funny because they also jumped on the Rigo bandwagon early on. Remember, he knocked out guys in the first few fights. People were like, oh, this guy's amazing. You know, two gold medals and the whole bit. And, you know, wait for a couple distance fights, and then all of a sudden it's boring. We'll
see
how
Lomachenko is. Yeah, I think that was the tactic that, listen, it was successful with – Rigondeaux, in his ninth pro fight, becomes a champion. You know, here was a guy that was kind of defying all the ways of building a champion and making him completely dangerous, but that's kind of backfired on him in so many ways. They were thinking, well, it worked for Rigondeaux. It's got to work for Lomachenko, right? And sometimes that doesn't pan out. You know, exactly what you said. That first fight, yes, it was an all-action fight, but it wasn't something that we could really sit there and go, wow, this guy,
next level.
He guy could be a champion on the next fight. This guy can, you know, go against all the boxing rules of what traditional fighters have done, contenders have done to become champions. And you know what? I picked Siri because I picked him off of experience. And to me, even though you have a great amateur background, the experience in pro, it's always going to outweigh a guy that's coming in with only his second pro fight with anybody. You know, now, did it damage Lomachenko? I think it damaged his ego, but I don't think it damaged him enough because I think the smartest thing that Lomachenko did in this fight was hold. It was excessive hold, but I think it saved him from getting knocked out, to tell you the truth. Because if he would have allowed Siri to continue to go into that body shot, what was eventually going to end up happening was the body shots were gradually going to start moving up. What you did see, he was trying to move up and throw, you know, some straight overhand rights and uppercuts that were catching Lomachenko. And Lomachenko was smart enough to now, I wouldn't say use experience, but he definitely used common sense and said, I need to grab this guy because he's flattening up my tires here. And now he's going to start damaging the bodywork. So he was smart enough to do that. And that's what really saved him from a major beating, which Orlando Cruz wasn't smart enough to do against Siri. Didn't hold him.
That's the thing. I mean, what I thought the kid did, you know, when the guy tries to hold you, you know, like Teddy Atlas brings up, it's like it takes two to get to have that happen. You've got to be complicit. And the one thing I'll say about Lomachenko in the fight, I mean, there was a few things. I think he's got a lot of tools. I think he could be very good. But he didn't figure it out until late to let his hands go. And once he figured that out, it was like he'd solved the puzzle, you know. All right, I'm not going to exert so much energy getting my hands out. Sometimes I will. But just don't let this guy clinch me. Don't let him get near me and keep him at range. And eventually he hurt Salido. And that was really, to me, was impressive in that in a crisis situation, in a tough fight, and down the stretch and in deep waters that he'd never been in before. Dude made some serious decisions and some adjustments, and they worked. You know, that speaks to the class of Lomachenko. I think he is going to be a very good fighter. But you're right. Every fighter on the planet wants that title fight. Chris Pearson, who got, you know, knocked down and a little bit of a struggle this week, he's like, I'm ready for the title now. Like, yeah, mentally you're ready, but there's all kinds of experiences that you have not had in the ring. I never really understand, even with the Charlos, it's like, wouldn't you want 25, 30 fights, really be a vet, you know? Maybe just 25 is solid. But, you know, I want to face, you know, I always ask this question of fighters when I interview them the first time, particularly prospects as they start to move up in the ranks. Have you faced every style, every look that you would like to? And, you know, do you think you've asked all the questions of yourself that can be asked before you get into situations that, you know, knockdowns and things that are unexpected? And almost to a person, no one ever says, no, I need to face this style or that style. They always say, like, well, you know, I had a long amateur career, so, you know, there's nothing new to me in the ring.
Right, I faced everything.
And I always think that's the wrong answer.
Absolutely.
You know?
You faced everything
like
for
saying,
four
well,
rounds.
Only five. What's that?
Here's the thing is that I always counter that because when I've talked to amateur fighters or whatever, you know, I always counter it, but you've only faced it for four rounds. You haven't faced it on a championship level. You know, the tides get stronger, get harder to swim through when you get to that eighth and ninth. You know, when you pass that eighth round, you get into the championship rounds, things get different. To me, that's when a fighter really finds out their character. It's after that eighth round, you find out how well your conditioning can get you through a fight, how well your footwork works, how well your hand speed is going to be there, and your punching power, how well it's going to be there to back you out of a situation that you're cornered in. You need those rounds in there to find out what you lack and what you need to find out about yourself. And Lomachenko was not given that opportunity. And like I said on my tweet, who advised him to do this? The same dude that told Amir Khan to take a stand back and wait for the Floyd Mayweather fight? This is what happens when you allow friends and people that are not part of this, a part of the boxing community that cares about seeing a fighter being developed, that care more about what's being put in their pocket.
That's the thing. I mean, I'm not going to speak to what Lomachenko's people wanted, you know, what ultimately they wanted other than the title shot, and they wanted it all right now. I mean, I think this business is about, I mean, you got to figure the guy's had like 400 fights. You know, his body has had some damage to it, you know, and it's like, look, I don't want to do 30 fights and really beat myself up on the professional level and then go for a title and hope that I get the right one or that the constellations have really aligned for me. I get that, you know, but at the same time, it's like there's a reason why there's amateurs and there's pros and why one is a completely different game than the other, you know. And you could see it in his game. You know, he was missing a lot of stuff. I mean, Siri was having his way with him in the whole corner, really. I mean,
and this really could be Siri's swan song here, to tell you the truth. He fought a smart fight. He fought an intelligent fight, but this is really a subpar Lomachenko, an inexperienced Lomachenko. Or am I wrong?
I don't know. You know, it was like, it could be his swan song because, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of miles on that odometer. And you could see it. He got hurt late in the fight. He was actually very tired late in that fight, and he was hiding it very well. But you could see it on his face in the corner. Like, he was kind of spent. And finally,
did he have a lot of water weight?
Of that.
Did he not have a lot of water weight on that face, man? I mean, his face really blew up. And when we get him on, man, I got to ask him, was that the tactic kind of – absorb whatever Lomachenko's power, with that extra water weight, you know what I mean?
I talked to Steve about it on the show. I don't know if you were listening. His answer, he said he just hit a wall, and we'll have him on here in a minute to ask him about it, but that he hit
a
wall,
true.
I think, the day before, and was like, that's it. That's all I've got to give. And I think a guy knows. I mean, the fans always do the same song and dance every time. Oh, it's disrespectful to the sport. And they always jump to the assumption that the guy did it on purpose, as if...
It was only a pound up and pound up, too, right?
What's that?
Wasn't he just a pound over?
2 pounds over. But, I mean, people always say it's just 2 pounds. It's funny to me when it's, you know, it's just 2 pounds to lose and, you know, that son of a bitch. But then when Canelo has to lose an extra 2 pounds, hey, it's just 2 pounds. It's always just 2 pounds. That's really easy to say when you got a beer in your hand and you're sitting on the couch, you know, or you're a rider or whatever. When you're not a fighter making weight, I mean, what kind of idiotic plan is it to probably lose? I mean, if he came in at 47 on the night, even though I got to say those are unofficial scales, and HBO, they need to make a decision. Either they're going to reweigh the guys in the same state as they officially weigh in, which is an official scale with the state commission watching, and these guys in their underwear, or however they need to get to whatever weight they're going to be, you know, let me show you my natural weight. Or they got to abolish the thing. Because
Right. Everybody's
going, he's 147 pounds. Well, what was he wearing when he stepped on those scales? When did how was that done? I want to know what that process is. And some people can turn it down, some people can't. And like Steve even said on the show, he's talked to people in the industry that are like, you know what? I'm not going to have my guy weigh in anymore. HBO harps on it way too fucking much. And
right.
I agree with that. You know, so...
Let's patch in the man of the hour and let's ask him about the weight here. I believe we got Orlando Sirius Salido with us. Orlando, are you there?
Yes. Yeah, we have also the translator should be on the line as well.
I'm here.
Okay, okay. Great. I'm sorry, what was the translator's name? My bad.
Edmundo.
Edmundo. Hey, thanks for doing this for us here, man. I really appreciate it. Let Orlando know that we thank him very much for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring.
Oye, Orlando, dicen que muchas gracias por tomar el tiempo de hablar con ellos y hacer la entrevista.
Oh, gracias a ellos por tomar en cuenta aquí.
He said thanks to you guys for, you know, taking the time as well.
I'm gonna let Gabriel Montoya to open it up. Go ahead, Gabriel.
First off, thank you for coming on the show, Siri, and I want to congratulate you on your win. I thought it was a sensational fight. But I know, you know, we'd be remiss, and you've come on the show before, and we've asked you hard questions, and I'd like to just ask you about if you could take us through the week heading into the fight and what happened with the weight. And just talk about that first. Just when did he know that he wasn't going to make weight, and how did that all play out?
Orlando dice que muchas gracias por hoy tomar el tiempo que te han tenido en el show antes. Y la primera pregunta es de que les digas lo que estabas pensando la semana de antes de la pelea. ¿Cuándo te diste cuenta o si te diste cuenta que no ibas a dar peso? ¿Cuál fue el proceso de la semana?
Bueno, yo no me estaba concentrado en la pelea y regularmente marcar a 126 libras. Estuve trabajando fuerte. Siempre batallo en la última semana, siempre cuando batallo más para quitarme esas libras. Yo creía que sí iban a salir como siempre salen, pero ahora no se pudo. El cuerpo ya no respondió.
He said he actually worked really hard all, you know, throughout training camp, and he was really focused for this fight. And he actually thought he was going to hit 126 because that's what he was weighing. But you know, typically historically his last week before, you know, before weigh-in is when he struggles the most to hit, you know, to shed the weight. So he tries to do it ahead of time. And he thought he was, you know, he was going to make weight.
So when he got there, before he got into that official weight scale, stepping on that weight scale, he thought that he was clear, like, you know, he was going to be fine.
So entonces antes de que cuando llegaste a pesarte el día de oficialmente, ¿pensaste que ibas a llegar al peso?
No, pues ya me había checado yo un día antes y ya no podía bajar más, ya no podía trabajar más. Si trabajaba más, se iba a poner en riesgo mi vida, mi salud, y preferí no esforzarme a sacar esas libras. Si hubiera tratado de sacar las libras o lo hubiera sacado en la pelea, no hubiera sido lo salido que bien.
He says that when he was about to weigh in officially, like, he had weighed himself the day before, so Thursday. He knew he wasn't going to make weight at that point, but he didn't want to drain himself or put his health at risk, and that's why he didn't try to, you know, lose the 2 pounds that the 2 extra pounds before Friday.
Got you.
Can you just tell us through? You know, most boxing fans don't make weight. You know, can you take us through that process of what it feels like knowing I'm about to lose my title because I can't lose this weight, and yet I can't lose this weight? Or what does it all feel like? How bad is it? Can you take us through, like, the mental and physical and explain what that all feels like?
Que si les puedes explicar un poquito de lo mental y lo físico, o sea, lo mental en el aspecto de que tratas de llegar al peso y no llegas al peso, ¿cuál es tu estado mental cuando vas a perder tu título porque no puedes llegar al peso y qué es lo que piensas en ese proceso? ¿Cómo se siente?
No, pues se siente decepcionado uno por no marcar el límite, perder el título, dejarlo ahí en la báscula. Algo por lo que ha luchado mucho uno, pero esta vez el cuerpo no dio de más y primeramente está mi salud y pensé primero en mí mismo que en lo demás.
He says he obviously trains well for the fights. but it's the worst. It's the worst way to lose your title. But at the same time, he goes into a fight wanting to be as healthy as possible. And if he can't, you know, if he does have a good camp and can't make weight, he's not going to put his health on the line to lose 2 pounds and keep that title that way.
Let me ask you one more thing, just about the weight. I don't know. Sorry, Dave. Just occurred to me. When they HBO made a big deal about you weighing 147 pounds on the night of the fight. When they weighed you for their HBO weigh-in, were you wearing clothing? Can you explain how that was done? Is it done the same way as the official weigh-in?
The night of the fight, you mean, Saturday?
Yeah, when they do their HBO unofficial weigh-in. Can you take us through that process?
Okay. Que si puedes explicar el proceso del cuando te pesaron el sábado, que es el peso es oficial. ¿Qué fue, cómo fue que te pesaron? ¿Te pesaron con ropa? O sea, si puedes explicar lo que pasó ese día, al día que te, al momento que te pesaron el sábado. Porque HBO hizo gran, o sea, una gran escena sobre que pesaste 147 el día de la pelea.
Sí, pero me pesaron con toda la ropa.
Yeah, he said they actually ended up weighing him with clothes on that day.
That's what I figured, shoes, the whole bit, right?
Yeah.
Con los zapatos también, ¿no? Con los zapatos también, Orlando?
Sí, con todo. Sí, con todo. Sí.
Yeah, with everything.
How much did you think he actually weighed then? It was 147.
¿Cuánto piensas tú que pesaste realmente, digamos, sin la ropa el día de la pelea?
143.
143.
42,
143.
Okay.
Sí.
So he's a junior lightweight.
I'm sorry? Still a welterweight, but just barely, you know.
Right.
Not the 147. And it seemed like HBO made it seem like he did it on purpose, as if it was a strategy. Can you ask him that? Was it a strategy to lose a bunch of weight, but not all the weight, and then lose your belt on the scales? That seems ridiculous to me that it would be a strategy.
Están preguntando que si fue una estrategia para, o sea, como lo hizo ver HBO, es que fue una estrategia para ti, el hecho de que, o sea, ibas a llegar a peso arriba y luego ibas a subir hasta, según ellos, 147, fue una estrategia que para ellos se le hace ridículo, ¿fue una estrategia para ti?
No, nosotros siempre tratamos de marcar la división, no tratar de abandonar el título ahí en la báscula, siempre somos unos profesionales, pero esta vez no se pudo, y cuando el cuerpo no quiere, no quiere, y esta vez ya no quiso. Yo tengo 12 años peleando en la 126, cada año me iba costando más marcar el peso.
He says that it definitely wasn't a strategy. He's always tried to be professional about making weight, and he's been fighting at 126 for 12 years, and, you know, when his body doesn't want to respond, his body doesn't want to respond.
Let me ask you this.
It was not a strategy.
Right. Let me ask him this. When he was fighting Lomachenko, was it the weight that got him more tired, or was it the holding that Lomachenko was doing that got him more tired in those later rounds?
Oye, Orlando, ¿qué fue lo que te cansó más? Porque, o sea, ¿fue el peso lo que te cansó en la pelea? ¿O fue el hecho de que Lomachenko te seguía abrazando o te seguía, o sea, te seguía deteniendo?
No, pues fueron las dos cosas. Él me estuvo abrazando, y aparte de que te había trabajado bastante para tratar de marcar el paso.
He said that it was a combination of both. It was a combination of Lomachenko holding him, but it wasn't the weight itself of being over. It was the struggle that he had to get to 126, or to get down to as close to 126 as possible, that kind of made him tired.
So that made him a little bit more fatigued, because he was forcing his body to get to that weight, and that affected him on Saturday night.
Right. So it wasn't the perception of being overweight. It was actually him trying to get close to 126 as possible throughout his camp.
Got you. Now, the big complaint that HBO was saying was through the whole night was low blows, how Lawrence Cole wasn't catching it, and now how
how he was doing a veteran move and throwing the opposite of where Cole would be standing at to land those low blows. Did he find that to be true? Was he using some veteran tactics there, or was this just a form of letting my hands go and land where they may?
Otra cosa con la percepción de HBO es de que estaba estirando mucho bajo del cinto, o sea, que le estaba pegando los huevos, ¿no? ¿Fue una estrategia veterana de tu parte en que estabas tirando al lado contrario de donde estaba el referí, o fue que simplemente tú estabas tirando y donde caían, caían?
No, yo estaba tirando, no, nunca fue mi intención estarle golpeando abajo. Estaba tirando el golpe al estómago, nunca, no fue ni estrategia ni nada de eso, ni que el refri me mirara ni nada de eso. Yo nomás traté de hacer mi trabajo, hubo golpes que se fueron después del límite, pero no, nunca fue mi intención.
He said that it definitely wasn't a strategy to try to hit him low. He was definitely trying to go to the body, and he was letting his hands go, but... You know, it wasn't a situation where he was intentionally trying to give low blows or hit him with low blows. It was more just that's just where they landed.
Now, if he would have, let's just say if it was a different ref and they would have warned him about the low blows and taken a point away from him, would that have changed the fight in his opinion? Would he had to kind of revert to a different plan in attacking Lomachenko?
¿Tú piensas que si hubiera sido otro referí dentro del cuadrilátero y si tú hubieras, si te hubieran quitado, digamos, un punto por cada, o sea, cada vez que le pegabas abajo, crees que hubiera cambiado la pelea, hubiera cambiado tu estrategia de cómo estabas peleando el sábado?
Pudiera ser, pero... como les digo, yo nunca fue mi intención estarle golpeando abajo ni nada. Yo soy un peleador que no siempre peleo entre los reglamentos.
He said that, you know, it could possibly be that it would have definitely changed the fight a lot, but once again, he goes back to the fact that it wasn't his intention or wasn't a quote unquote strategy to hit low, you know, but he doesn't. He says it probably could have changed the fight. He didn't have a lot much more to elaborate on that.
Right. I wasn't saying that was a strategy was to hit him. No, I believe that. I think that his strategy was to wear down the body because he was a younger fighter.
Right.
He was facing.
Right.
To clarify, to ask him this, you know, for my follow up with that question is that was the strategy was to work the body to eventually move up to the top. Lomachenko in those late rounds, and that obviously never happened because of the holding. Was that taken, that part of his strategy taken away because of the excessive holding?
Para seguir sobre la previa pregunta, Orlando, ¿tú piensas que, o sea, tu estrategia fue de pegarle el cuerpo al principio, los primeros rounds, y luego después tratar de subirlos a la cabeza? Y si esa fue tu estrategia, ¿crees que no se pudo hacer porque por lo tanto que te estuvo detuvo?
Exacto, por lo tanto que me detuvo y tanto que estuvo corriendo, pues él estaba a la retirada, agarrado, salía por pierna, y cuando me acercaba, pues él me abrazaba y por eso estuvimos trabajando primero abajo y
Yeah, he said the strategy definitely was to try to wear him down. So there, first round, you know, he was trying to go to the body, and then they were planning on going upstairs afterwards. But then he kept every time, you know, first of all, he kept running around the ring, and then after he'd get close enough, Lomachenko would hold. So that second part of that strategy couldn't play out.
Gotcha. What was his thoughts of just in general? We didn't get a chance to talk before the fight, but having to face a guy that's 1-0, you know, he's a talented amateur. All that aside, he's still 1-0. How does he feel about that? The sanctioning body would allow it. I mean, was it considered just a voluntary defense and so you were, like, fine with it? Or did he feel as if he didn't really have a choice in having to face Lomachenko?
No pudieron hablar ellos contigo antes de la pelea, pero ¿cuál fue tu proceso o cuál fueron tus sentimientos con el hecho de que estabas peleando con una persona que tenía una pelea ganada profesional y claro que tenía un récord amateur pues muy bueno, pero en realidad, ¿cuál fue tu pensamiento con el hecho de que te pusieron en el ring con una persona que simplemente había ganado una pelea profesional?
No, pues yo, mi pensamiento fue que pues, yo estoy para pelear con el que me ponga en la empresa. Me pusieron a Lomachenko, a mí no me interesa más el que la empresa dice, tú vas a pelear con él, pues yo peleo con el que me pongan enfrente. Y
yo creo que la pregunta, I'm sorry, I'm going to go ahead and just make sure I clarify the question, okay? Yo creo que la pregunta más a lo que ellos se refieren es que te sentías falta, o sea, que te faltaron al respeto con el hecho de que te pusieron a alguien tan verde, o ¿cuáles fueron tus pensamientos psicológicos en ese aspecto? ¿Orlando?
¿Hello?
¿Bueno? ¿Hello?
¿Orlando? ¿Are you there?
Okay. ¿Orlando? ¿Sí escuchaste la pregunta? ¿Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I think Orlando's having problems with his phone.
Orlando.
Sí.
Okay.
¿Sí escuchaste la pregunta?
Sí.
Entonces, ¿cuáles fueron tus pensamientos psicológicos con el hecho de que te, o sea, una persona como tú que, a lo que ellos se están refiriendo, es una persona como tú que puso el tiempo, peleó sus peleas, te pusieron a uno con una pelea ganada?
Pues mi pensamiento, como te digo, a mí no me interesa el rival que me pongan enfrente. A mí si me vas a pelear con él, a mí me importa su récord, ni nada de eso, yo no me subo a pelear. Que la falta de respeto, pues para mí no es para los que están en la lista esperando, que tienen años esperando una oportunidad, que los brinquen a ellos y den la oportunidad a Lomachenko, pues para ellos es una falta de respeto. Para mí no, yo peleo, yo soy el boxeador, yo peleo con el que me pongan enfrente y no me interesa nada más que pelear y ganar.
So when I asked him the question first, he just said, you know, he doesn't care who he fights against.
Right.
He just wants to, whoever they put in front of him, that's who he's going to fight. I got where you were getting with the question, so I elaborated in saying, did you feel disrespected or was there anything in that sort? He's like, no, I didn't feel disrespected. I'm going to fight whether it's Lomachenko or whoever else. But, you know, the people who should feel disrespected are the people that got jumped or looked over so that Lomachenko could get this title shot. He himself, he fights whoever he wants or whoever they put in front of him. That's his job. He doesn't get into the politics of it. But those other people are the ones that should really feel disrespected.
That's an excellent point. That is an excellent point. Let me ask him, and we'll let him go here after this one. My last question for him, for myself. I know Gabriel has any more, but my last question is going to be, seeing that his body's struggling to make weight, where does he go from here now? Does he move up, or is this the last time we see Orlando back in the ring?
Orlando, viendo cómo respondió tu cuerpo, ¿cuáles son tus pensamientos? ¿Vas a subir de peso o va a ser la última pelea de tu carrera? ¿Qué pasa de aquí en adelante?
Sí, como te digo, ya tengo mucho tiempo peleando en el 126, como 12 años. Ya mi cuerpo ya no más para esa división, así que hay que ascender a 130, buscar una oportunidad con el campeón que esté ahí presente.
Yeah, he said that, you know, he's been fighting at 126 for a long time, now 12 years, and he definitely doesn't want to put his body through that, so he's going to definitely jump up to 130 and see what opportunities they give him at that weight.
So there wouldn't even be a possible rematch with Lomachenko. If Loma wanted a rematch, he would have to jump up and wait, right, to face him again.
And entonces, si Lomachenko quería una revancha, o sea, ¿Tendría que subir a 130 para pelear contigo o cuál sería tu pensamiento si él quisiera una revancha?
Exactamente, exactamente. Si quiere una revancha, pues en la 130. En la 130 se puede hacer porque 126 ya. Ya no más, no, ya no lo doy más.
Yeah, he said 130 would be the rematch weight. He just can't do a 126 anymore.
Well, there you go. Gabriel, you got any more questions for him, brother?
Not at all. I mean, I just, you've been fighting for a very, very long time, almost half your life, I believe. How long do you want to keep fighting? I mean, you're 33 years old, you're a young man. Obviously, you've got enough fight to beat a young guy like Lomachenko, but how much longer do you think you want to go?
Obviamente has peleado mucho tiempo en tu vida. Tienes una larga carrera. ¿Cuántos años más piensas que vas a pelear o cuáles son tus pensamientos en cuanto a cuánto vas a seguir esta carrera?
No, puede ser el cuerpo lo dirá, ¿no? Si el cuerpo sigue respondiendo, pues seguimos peleando, pero el cuerpo también dice uno hasta aquí y hasta aquí se para todo.
He says he doesn't want to put a time frame on it. A lot of it's just going to be based off how his body responds. You know, if his body can respond to training camps and to fighting, he'll continue as long as he has, you know, the physical ability to do so.
Okay. Well, Orlando, otra vez, gracias mucho para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros aquí en Leaving the Ring.
No, gracias a ustedes por invitarme aquí al ring. Aquí estamos para servirles, saben. Gracias.
Okay. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you so much.
And our interpreter,
yep.
Thank you, bro, for taking the time to do this for us, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Hey, Gabe. I know it's on the air, and not to, you know, I do respect your guys' work, man. And I know you and I got into a little Twitter thing about the PEDs, but I do respect your guys' work, man. Anytime you guys need me, let me know.
Absolutely, brother.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Get into it, everybody. You know what I mean?
I don't. Well, who was that I got it? I did do it with a lot of people. I didn't catch his name at the top. So I'm like, well, it's all
God,
good.
God, you're such a slut.
I argue with so many people. I'm like, who did I argue with this time?
Gabriel, such a whore. Anyways,
I wonder who we got.
Yeah,
I got to find out. We'll have to ask him.
Yeah, he's got to tweet us or tweet you and tell us who he's arguing. Hey, let's move on really quick. We did talk about Orlando Siri Salcido here on Leaving the Ring with us, but let's talk about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. versus Brian Vera. Definitely a more focused condition Chavez, but you know, going in, he didn't get on the unofficial scales of HBO, but you got to think he's walked in maybe 20-25 pounds heavier. And I know HBO was really harping about how great of a chin that Chavez has, and he may have a great chin. He may have a great chin, but I guess my only question is for me to have clarification about his chin is to finally see him get a hit by a puncher and by a guy that's almost equal in weight. Is that too much to ask for, Gabriel? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I know some people are like, oh, and somebody actually said to me, I was harder on the Garcias for the whole, you know, the Garcia camp, for the Rios DMMA positive and for all the stuff that's come off of that and then the epinephrine stuff than I was on Salido for making weight. And to that, you know, we look at this. We've talked about this a lot. It's an inexact science, making weight. People think they know, and they don't know. I'm not talking about fans. I'm talking about fight people. How dehydrated the fighters are on a regular basis, just in general, not just the week of the fight. The lack of nutrition, the way these guys eat or don't eat all the time, to be wondering about their weight, especially when they're fighting in a weight class that's, like, you know, well below what they normally walk around at or even should walk around at, and certainly way lower than they are when they're literally in peak physical condition. Now you're at the peak. Now drop 10 pounds by dehydrating and starving for a week. So when a guy doesn't make weight, I don't look at him. Siri has been a professional his whole career. I mean, he's been a professional fighter, since, like, 15? He knows how to make weight. And don't throw in the whole
PD things out there. I see some people go like, well, he's a PD cheater. He was cleared from that, guys. You know, it wasn't overturned.
Well, he checked
absolutely.
It out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
He checked it out. I mean, he has his version of it. But at the same time, it's like you can't, you know, because a guy tested positive one time, yes, there should always be suspicion. And I think those guys should always be tested rigorously. And you should at least spot check them now and again in the middle of a camp or when they're at a competition. No question. That said, though, you know, he didn't test positive for anything after this fight. Now, granted, I don't know what kind of testing was done for this fight. You know, granted, it was Texas, so probably not the greatest testing. But, again, it's like you just can't keep saying, well, you know, you got to look at every case with the specifics. And to me, again,
right.
It's just like I asked him a question, maybe it was a leading question, but it's like, was that a strategy to lose, like, probably what, like 8 pounds? 10 pounds, but then be like, all right, but we're not going to lose those last two. I'm going to lose my belt, which is like, you know, what this fight is for, and really all my leverage because I'm a tough SOB, and nobody would want to fight me unless I had this belt. But we're going to not make weight. That way, hopefully, I can be really big on the night of the fight and gain an advantage over this young guy. I mean, maybe that's a strategy, but it doesn't seem like it would be a very viable one. I mean, just saying it out loud sounds stupid. At some point, you know, you got to look at the system and say, like Steve said, this should be stiffer penalties for not making weight. I say we need to get this whole weight debacle under control. Maybe look at a guy and say, what's your natural walk-around weight? What's your weight when you're at your physical peak? Okay, these are now the divisions that you can compete in based on that information. Instead, we're getting guys that are just like winging it and doing things under the radar. We're not monitoring it, you know? I mean, I'd like to know what Floyd Mayweather is at his physical peak. If he had natural 47, then hey, you can probably fight at 54, and maybe you can lose enough weight to fight at 140, and certainly you could fight at 47 if that's where you're comfortable. That's your range, you know what I mean? That's a solution.
Right.
But to vilify a guy and assume that he's evil, and it's always evil. It's always easier to like put things on people when they don't speak English. He doesn't speak English, and you look at him, and he's a little bit dour. It's like looking at Angulo for the very first time, and he looks like a really gruff dude. You know, he's got the short haircut. He had the Freddie Mercury mustache. You know, and he just looked like kind of angry.
Yeah,
and you talk
he does.
To him, and the guy doesn't stop joking. He's got kind of a high voice. He's hilarious. He's always joking around and always playing.
He's always an
upbeat
dude.
Opposite of the way he looks.
Yeah, he's always an upbeat guy, you know. It doesn't look like he's in a bad mood. I mean, he's got the face that this guy's just, you know, he's pissed all the time. But then when you start talking to him, when I played golf with him this one time, me and him, we had a blast, you know. I mean, he was making fun of me. I was making fun of him, and we had a great time. I mean, and then I would see him at the fights, and he was always the same person, you know, always in a good mood, always full of smiles, and how are you doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. But, hey, let's move on. Let's get into that Julio Cesar Chavez fight there. Gennady Golovkin is...
Speaking of weight, yeah.
Gennady Golovkin is the guy that most want to see Chavez get in the ring with. Chavez called him out, as well as, you know, Ward. And is Chavez too big for him? Would this be a bit to chew for Gennady Golovkin? Even though they sparred each other at the wild card, could this be something that's just too big of a meal? You know, because the fact that Junior blows up into a catering truck when he steps into the ring.
This dude, yeah, talk about a range. It's like, all right, you can fight at cruiserweight or heavyweight.
Yeah.
This guy, he looks gigantic. Although, you know, here's the thing, though. It's a little bit of a optical illusion because what is Brian Vera really?
Well, Brian Vera really is a 154-pounder, man, or 160.
And 160. So how big is Chavez Jr. really? I want to see him next to, like, Andre Ward. You know, or Sergey Kovalev at 75. And, like, let's see what they really look like. Yeah, because, I mean, dude is, he's gigantic, you know, and it's, I thought it was an interesting fight. I thought Chavez, I don't know how much, did you watch him in the when he was warming up in the locker room? I still have to send you this video of him. It was the day that Bonas and him sparred, and I've got video of it on my phone. And I've never seen somebody that's held a world title and fighting at the level that Chavez is on TV seem so completely unathletic. And you watch him just throwing punches in the dressing room, and you're like, he doesn't even look like an athlete. Like, I throw straighter punches than that guy. Like, my punching frame is tighter than his. And yet, when it gets in the ring versus somebody, it really does work for him. He throws that right kind of wide.
Well,
and he's really good at, like, kind of dipping his head to the left, and, like, that right catches you, and you don't think it's going to be there. He's a very awkward, strange fighter.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, is it really a big surprise that he can't throw straight punches? Have you seen his beard? It doesn't continually flow across his face. He's got patches here and there. Shave it already, dude. It's annoying. I don't understand that.
Wolverine.
I don't. You remember that caveman commercial? It's so easy. A caveman could do it. I just keep expecting Julio to pop up like, sí, yo puedo hacerlo también. You know what I mean? But I agree with you. I want to see, and I was asking this, you know, I know that HBO was harping about his chin. Who they should have really been harping about who had a great chin is Brian Vera. I mean, this guy's got a phenomenal chin. He's, you know, he takes a good shot. He smiles at you after that. And you know what? He's nonstop. Is Brian Vera going to be on the category of A-class every time out, exception in the ring? Absolutely not. But, dude, he's an exciting guy. I would watch him any day of the week. I'd like to see him get back in there. It's good to see that he got his redemption and get in the rematch. But he didn't get the win. But in the overall, to me, in my opinion, he got the win because his chin was able to absorb the best shots that Julio Cesar Chavez threw out there. And for a minute, to me, if this was a 15-rounder, Julio looked to me that he was kind of being discouraged. I mean, he was throwing everything at him except for the cartel, and Vera just kept coming. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
That's the thing. I mean, Vera's got a good chin. I mean, I like Vera. I think he's just a hardworking man and a real honest fighter.
Yeah,
and,
big time. You know, if I was Chepo Guzman, if I had a place, if I was going to hide anywhere, I wouldn't hide in the beard of Chavez because there's just too many spots there to be found. I'd hide in the jaw of Brian Vera. That's where I would go, you know? It'd be hard to crack to open that safe because, man, he was taking some sledges there. But I go back again. I want to see Chavez with somebody that's equally in size with him, like a Kova, like a Ward, like a Carl Froch, guys that could really crack at a heavier weight. And then we could sit back if Julio could really take that. And like I said, I'm not going to say he can't take a good shot. But here's the thing. We haven't seen him take a big shot from a big puncher who equals size with him on fight night. That's my question, okay? And just like on Saturday night, on that 12th round, like I tweeted, hey, you know, because they keep saying there's a lot of resemblance of Junior with his father. Man, there was a little bit of Pernell Whitaker in him, too, on that 12th round when he just danced away from Vera.
Yeah, I thought that was... It was kind of funny because all night long, HBO was on the hard sell, you know. It was like hard sell boxing office. It was just brutal. And they kept selling the 12th round, that spectacular 12th round against Sergio Martinez, you know. The fight where he tested positive for dope afterwards. But they kept bringing it up. And then he came with that 12th round. Where he danced, like he didn't earn the right to dance. It wasn't like he wasn't like you know him shut the guy out and like he hadn't outboxed him to the point of never getting touched and be like, you know what, man, now I'm going to go to full retreat.
Fight.
It was just like it was a good fight. It was a good tough fight. And instead, Chavez, I mean, he's just not his dad. That's the one thing, and I think we've always known that. But it's just like wow, it's amazing how far smoke and mirrors can take you. You know,
big time.
I just, I just looked at it and I kind of went, wow, everything that you'd gained in the first 11 rounds and all the lead up to this, I'm going to be in better shape. And he was in better shape. He looked better. He seemed in much better shape this fight, and just, you know, more energy and sustained energy. But he got mentally discouraged or something. He did take a couple good shots to the dome. Think about what a great beard he has. Well, he's getting hit by a 54-60. How about, I don't know, fighting somebody in his weight class?
Yep.
That he's not, you know, gigantic against.
How about challenging yourself? Yeah,
to me,
exactly. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Any goodwill that he had gained, he kind of lost in that 12th round. It's just, you know, you can see the numbers are dwindling for the franchise. I don't think people have a lot of hope. And, you know, speaking as a Mexican-American, you're Mexican-American, you know, we're Mexicans, we admire hard work and honesty and the value of what hard work, you know, the things that hard work can bring you. And Chavez Jr. is there because of who his dad decided, you know, what his dad decided to name him. And then he's been developed and he's worked to get, you know, to stay where he's at, I guess. But at some point, I think the Mexican fan base kind of looked at him as that silver spoon kid. And there's a bit of an arrogance that I'm going to be here no matter what. Like, I'm going to dance this 12th round, even though it's kind of a tight fight and it's a competitive fight. And I'm just going to act like I got this because I got this. And I wonder how long he can sustain that.
Let me ask you this, okay? And I'm not defending the kid, but I'm going to be devil advocate here. Because everybody thinks that Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was born with the silver spoon. When and somebody tweet me if I'm wrong about this, but if I remember correctly, Senior was broke, you know? I mean, he owed so much money back to Mexico because of borrowing so much cash that he was broke. That I think that what happened with Chavez Jr. is, he, like he mentioned, I grew up in a home of drugs and you know, my father not being there and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He kind of had a hard life, okay, where this was all that was left for him, you know, like, and a prime example is, you know, my father was a construction worker and that was passed down to me because we just didn't have enough money to send me off to college. That, I mean, I'm not saying that happened to me, but I'm just saying, you know, where you find that in small towns, you know, where, you know, you have six mechanics in the family, so it's only obvious you're going to become a mechanic. I think that it just kind of fell down with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. was that, hey, listen, I can make a good living by just being a fighter because I don't know anything else out there for me to do. I don't know if I have anything else that can make me build the cash that I need to keep my family afloat, not himself, but keep his father afloat, keep his mom afloat, his brother afloat. I just wonder if that is a major play of why he's a fighter, why he decided to take this profession. I'd love to interview him and ask him that. You know, I mean, when we had like Frankie Gomez, remember when he turned pro, we had him on the show. We asked him a very direct question. And the question was, did you want to turn pro or was this because your family needs help? And he answered truthfully to us. Because my family need help. I wonder how much of that scenario is with Chavez Jr.
Yeah, I mean, I think to treat him as if he's a silver spoon kid that has had everything handed to him, I think is the wrong thing. I think that he's had a path laid out for him that he could take or not take because of who he is. I think there's a tremendous pressure to take that path. But, you know, you and I both trained. We've both been in the ring. To varying degrees, you've actually competed. I've just sparred. But we know that you don't play this game, you know, and you don't get to where Chavez is and you don't win fights unless you work hard and actually can fight a little bit, you know. So I'll give him that. But I do, you know, and I do wonder, you know, if Senior squandered so much of the family, of his own fortune, that they really do need this, you know. But he's starting to make money at this point. Chavez Jr. has made some good money every time he fights.
Well, yeah.
You know, I wonder what it is at this point, you know. I wonder what the motivation is.
You got to keep up with that living, though. You know what I mean? When you start becoming accustomed of what you're spending, you kind of get sucked, and you kind of get stuck, and you continue to do that.
It's like there was – I forget who was telling me this story recently. Maybe it was you. It was like two kids, and one had saved to get – a brand new car or like, you know, a car for himself. And the other kid was a rich kid and he got his car bought for him. And they were like the same car, but you could always tell whose car it was, because the rich kid, his car was all jacked up and dirty, had a dent in it, and he just didn't care because somebody gave it to him. The other guy's car, you know, armor-all wheels, the whole bit, everything was buffed to, you know, perfection because he cared about it. He worked for it. And that's kind of Chavez Jr.'s career. And that 12th round, where it's like, well, I'm going to get another bout. I'm going to be on HBO. You know, Andre Ward's in litigation. Triple G just canceled his fight. You know, may not say those are his motivations, but HBO needs ratings, and they need a flagship guy, and he does good ratings. He is a flagship guy. You can do a fight, and plenty of people will show up. And it's going to be an action fight because it's Chavez Jr. And he's a big name. It's recognizable. So, why not run?
Junior needs the right opponent, though, now, in my opinion, to bring those numbers, because in Texas, that arena said a whole lot of what this kid draws now. He has really lost the respect of Latino fans. I don't see them. I mean, sadly enough, man, the kid just dropped the torch. He finally burned himself, man, to tell you the truth. I think he finally burned himself where he's turned fight fans off. Canelo has really picked up the slack in terms of catching the imagination of the Mexican fans out there. And Chavez has got some work to do. He's got some work to be cut out. This is all, you know what, I'm putting it out there, man. This kid has really cut his wrist in how he's behaved and how he's treated the sport of boxing. Because regardless of whatever, Mexican fans are very prideful. And, you know, even though a lot of them can be very arrogant about their fighter, whether their fighter's cheating or what, and they could be blindsided about that, when it comes to disrespecting the sport and showing that you don't care about it, it's really quick that you could see a Mexican fan go like, you know what, F that dude. You know, because Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. is very close and dear to the hearts of the Mexican fans out there, man. So I think Julio has got a lot of proof. I think his second fight around is going to be really telling of where he really does stand in terms of numbers and stats with HBO and with the fight fans across the world, or across the border.
People just took it to watch him. I think as long as he's Chavez, they'll watch him. Even if to deride him and sit there and say, well, he ain't his dad. You know, I think people will always kind of keep coming back to see if some greatness will appear. You know, or something of his father. They say, well, his dad didn't start getting great till, like, you know, he got into the 60s of his fights, you know. So maybe, but,
well,
I just don't see it. I mean, I look at Chavez Jr. and I go, this fight I put him in, there's not many fights I'd pick him to win, though, of those fights that I'd put him in.
Absolutely. Well, fight fans. This is at the tail end of our show here on Leaving the Ring. Everybody enjoyed this pay-per-view fight this weekend. I hope you guys have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys next week. Don't forget, every Monday night, the next round, every Tuesday night, you have Boxeo Tijuana Radio. Don't forget to download the app, and we'll see you guys back over here Thursday again at 11 a.m. on Leaving the Ring Radio. Again, have a great weekend with your family and friends. Don't drink and drive, because you will spill your beer.
Dave, as always, fun show. I can't believe it's already an hour and 40 minutes. But I'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.